This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, last Saturday, the House of Representatives in the United States sat in order to pass a bill giving aid principally to Ukraine, $60 billion of aid to Ukraine, but also to Israel and Palestine. Israel, I think, $19 billion and Palestine, $6 billion, and some also for Taiwan. But this had been held up, this money, by the Trump faction, which is considerable, in the House of Representatives. There was no problem getting it through the Senate, and now it's on its way. However, in the United States this week, we've also seen a growing sense of rebellion among students in universities, reflecting an anger that is growing about Biden's support for Israel and what Israel has been doing for the last 6 months. We're joined now from Washington by Niall Stanich. Niall is associate editor of The Hill, a very respected Washington newspaper, and he's also a White House columnist for The Hill. Niall, the passage of this bill took a long time. It is very important for Ukraine, and of course we're talking vast amounts of money here. But the Israeli part of it has gone under the radar, really. It's still significant. And given the behavior of the Biden administration in this war, if you want to call it that, some people would call it slaughter, on both sides, Hamas on October 7th and the Israelis ever since, it's really become a very significant protest now against Joe Biden and his handling of the war.
Yes, certainly. I mean, these protests that we're seeing on college campuses are spreading across the nation. I'm almost reluctant to give a specific number right now because the number could have increased by the time your listeners hear this. But those protests really plainly speak to dissatisfaction, obviously, especially among young people, with Biden's support for the most right-wing government in the history of the state of Israel under Mr. Netanyahu, and that government's counterattack, assault, whatever you want to call it, of Gaza, which has killed more than 34,000 people, according to the local authorities, approximately 10,000 women and approximately 14,000 children among them.
Yes, and there are terrible stories, and it is proposed by the Israelis that they now continue by going to Rafah, which is a town on the southern tip of the Gaza Strip, where they had advised people to go to get away from northern Gaza when they were effectively turning that into rubble. We don't know. There's over 1 million people there. And it seems to be a consensus now in the United States and everywhere else that this could be a bloodbath with hundreds, thousands, and hundreds of thousands of innocent people getting in the way of the Israeli advance.
Yes, the Biden administration has talked numerous times about the idea that it would not support an invasion of Rafah without what it terms a credible plan for how civilians can be evacuated. Now, as I speak to you right now, that plan has not materialized. It may do or it may not do. But I suppose the key question is, if Israel goes ahead with an assault on Rafah, what does the government of the United States do about it? The aid bill that you mentioned has already passed. President Biden's rhetoric has grown tougher about Israel over time, but his actions have not really changed in any significant or substantive way. And that is one of the reasons why you are seeing these widespread protests on college campuses, and why you're seeing the sympathies of Democratic voters in particular shifting toward the Palestinians over the course of the past 6 months.
Yes. Now, a piece I read in the New York Times, which you directed me to, was very vivid. It was written by a journalist who is extremely well disposed towards Joe Biden. He wrote a long piece saying effectively that this period and the behavior of Benjamin Netanyahu will be the thing that Joe Biden is remembered for, and that he can't understand why Biden has stuck to his position, which is, quote, ironclad support for Israel. And it ends with a plea from Joe Biden's wife, Jill. Stop it now, Joe. This is a quote which I've seen before, but even his wife can't get to him. He has a history with Israel, and he has a history with Netanyahu. It's now emerging and showing that even the person closest to him can't get to him.
Yeah, Jill Biden's quoted as saying, stop it now, Joe, in that piece by Nicholas Kristof, who, as you say, is certainly liberal inclined, but not a sort of AOC Bernie Sanders type. And you rightly note he's overall favorably disposed toward Biden. Kristof's argument, in essence, is that the conflict in Gaza has become Biden's war, even though the United States does not have troops on the ground there. And as you say, it's a lengthy piece, but in brief, the argument it's making is that Biden would clearly prefer to be defined by the war in Ukraine and by the United States' support for Ukraine and trying to repel the invasion of Russia, and instead has come to be defined by what is happening in Gaza. And Kristof's argument is that although it was, of course, understandable to almost everyone that Israel would strike back after the attacks of October the 7th, that Biden's embrace of Netanyahu, refusal to meaningfully curb Netanyahu while this bloodshed has gone on, has really greatly and gravely damaged Biden.
And with the prospect of the Israelis now going into Rafah to, as they say, finish off Hamas, who they believe have at least 4 battalions in Rafah. And there's no doubt that Hamas does hide behind the civilian population. This is likely now to sort of become big news again in the worst possible way. It appears, Niall, that Biden has he made a mistake here and kind of sleepwalked into this? Or is it a willful defiance of critics of Israel, and he's even prepared to lay his presidency down for it?
It's a combination of both, I think. I think that, as you and I have talked about before, Joe Biden has a long-standing fondness for Israel, an affinity with Israel, a position that is more common on Democrats of his generation than of a younger generation, a sort of view of Israel as a kind of plucky democracy. Related to that, and to some extent caused by that, I think that his embrace of Netanyahu and reluctance to really weigh in against what Israel has done has caused him really serious political damage, because it's not that every American voter is focused on this conflict, and it's certainly not the case that every American voter is sympathetic to the Palestinians. In fact, overall, when you include Republicans, who are generally very pro-Israel, a plurality of the American public is probably pro-Israel. The problem, I think, for Biden is, in his party, There are now pluralities who are more sympathetic with the Palestinians. And perhaps even more importantly, there are a lot of people who think that this situation in Israel and Gaza has become the defining moral test of Biden's presidency. Yes. And they feel that Biden has failed that test, and that's a problem.
And of course, the West, in quotes, which is what we believe exists, or vaguely, or did until very recently, America is the leader of the West, the world's policeman, the country that we look to. And it's argued that the big beneficiary of America and Joe Biden's commitment to Benjamin Netanyahu more than Israel, because it is his war and it's being fought under his terms. Mm. The victory will be Putin and perhaps others who are authoritarian, who don't believe in democracy, and who are, for want of a better phrase, not the West.
Mm. Yes, I think that's a completely fair argument, not least because the backing of Netanyahu leaves Biden and by extension the United States and by extension the West open to the charge of hypocrisy. For example, President Biden emerged to give a sort of laudatory speech to the House and Senate for having passed the foreign aid bill that we began with. He talked about the importance of that in its aid to Ukraine. And he said, with a note of quite justifiable horror in his voice, that actions by the Russians included the bombing of hospitals. Now, anyone who has turned on the news much, at least in the past 5 to 6 months, has seen Israel attack hospitals. Israel says that Hamas has used those hospitals as bases. The fact of the matter is that those hospitals have been destroyed and the death tolls have been very, very considerable. And just this week, we have been seeing, and I'm sure many of your listeners have seen, horrendous footage of apparent mass graves by a hospital in Khan Yunus. So anyway, the point is, it undermines, I think, or has undermined Biden's moral authority, such as it is, to have him so open to this accusation of double standards.
Now, a couple of weeks ago at a press conference, you asked some reasonable but pointed questions and you went viral for your troubles, which I know is not the way you work or seek to work. This week again, I saw you in a press conference asking very simple, basic questions. You couldn't get answers. This is typical, isn't it, of an administration under severe pressure?
Yeah, the press conference that you're referring to was at the State Department, and I asked a spokesperson for the State Department why there was apparent resistance to backing an independent investigation into the apparent discovery of those mass graves. That spokesperson said that the United States' first action would be to ask the government of Israel for more details. And I asked him, did he consider the government of Israel to be a credible source? And he said that he did. Those sort of exchanges, it's not really about me tooting my own horn. The point is that the administration, I think, is coming under pressure from me and from other journalists too, in terms of trying to defend things that, at the very minimum, a large number of Americans and people in the wider world find hard to defend. And that, I think, is the central difficulty. Now, the State Department or John Kirby, a national security spokesperson, can say whatever they wish. That's up to them. But I do think that there is increasing skepticism from the press and the public about some of those explanations.
And it appears now that, and indeed Netanyahu has said it, or referred to it as something that is about to happen, they're going into Rafah, where people are terrified and herded in. And it is said that there is a serious possibility now of famine, of death from starvation, and of course, of more killing of innocent people. So when you put that prospect together with these students resisting in a way we haven't really seen since Vietnam War, have we, Niall?
No.
This can only be almost, well, giving the election away. I don't want to use an inappropriate word, but killing your own campaign, shall we say.
Well, you noted the comparison to the Vietnam War, and I mean, there are very close parallels, not identical, but very close parallels to 1968, when there were widespread protests against the Vietnam War. Those ultimately caused President Lyndon Johnson, a Democrat, to not run for re-election, and ultimately his Democratic replacement was defeated by Richard Nixon, of all people. But the point, I think, is that similar to Vietnam, the situation in Gaza has created a massive fault line in the Democratic Party. Now, almost everywhere that Biden speaks, he has to contend with the possibility of protesters. A historical footnote, perhaps, Eamon, in 1968, the Democratic Convention was held in Chicago and was disrupted, to put it mildly, by pretty horrendous clashes between protesters and police. This year, the Democratic Convention is also in Chicago, and I would anticipate there being fairly vigorous demonstrations unless the situation in Gaza improves in an unexpected way between now and then.
Yes, and just to point out, you mentioned Bernie Sanders staying out of things mostly. Today, he actually waded in with some very sharp words indeed directed at the administration and at Joe Biden. But before we move on, is it an overstatement or is it a statement of fact that this presidential election in this coming November will be the most consequential election of our lifetimes?
Well, it will certainly be very consequential in terms of, the at least, at minimum, 50-50 chance of former President Donald Trump being re-elected. He has announced, there are sweeping plans apparently in place to, for example, to make his agenda more easily enacted. And that agenda involves, among other things, sapping any resistance to what Irish people would know as the civil service, to stopping his plans in their tracks. An example of the stakes, we'll perhaps get onto this, Eamon. I'm speaking to you on Thursday afternoon, Washington time. There is a Supreme Court hearing right now about presidential immunity from prosecution for allegedly criminal acts. And just, we'll, as I say, get into that. But during those arguments, the team for former President Trump made the, frankly, somewhat astonishing argument that if a president of the United States ordered the assassination of a political rival, that that could be deemed a political act and therefore not, at least in a straightforward way, be vulnerable to criminal prosecution.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome. Like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Now, Mr. Trump is in court, as most people will know, in New York. It is a criminal charge that has been laid against him. Mm-hmm. This time last week when we spoke, it wasn't clear if a jury would be assembled in time to start on Monday, as the judge had said he wanted to, but it was, and they did start on Monday. And Trump, in this case, he looks, insofar as you can tell, a diminished figure somewhat. He's under a gag order, which he won't like, by the judge. He has to be careful what he says. But he also looked tired, a little bit disheveled when he's come and appeared outside the court. He also, according to observers in the court, has nodded off on a few occasions. It's not a very nice courtroom. It's a rough place. He isn't holding up very well.
No, I mean, that is certainly some of the reporting that Trump has not, he hasn't liked several elements of all of this. One being that the conduct that is being scrutinized is itself fairly tawdry. I mean, this relates to an alleged sexual encounter with an adult actress, Stormy Daniels, and another accusation of an affair with a former Playboy model. So that doesn't particularly please him to have that talked about again. Then it also doesn't amuse him that he cannot fire back, because he's like any other defendant, he's bound by the rules of the courtroom. He has tried to get around that by addressing reporters immediately afterward each day, but that hasn't really worked out well. And then Trump, a man who's very concerned about image and appearance and all of that stuff, doesn't appear to like the fact that the courtroom itself is a bit on the dog-eared side. It's not great lighting. He complains it's too cold. All of these sort of things seem to bother him as well.
Yeah, and it is essentially an election between an 81-year-old incumbent and Trump. Mm-hmm. And it has been easy because up till recently, Trump has been able to give the impression of vigor and strength, and Biden has not. He has looked increasingly frail. This is something that the Trump campaign were expected to make a lot of, weren't they, Niall? But it might be more difficult to make much of it now because he's subject to the same treatment himself, or vulnerable to it.
Sure, and Democrats are definitely pressing that case, not only in relation to his demeanor in court. Trump himself, though he has always had a propensity, of course, to say somewhat bizarre things, has been prone to rather rambling comments at recent rallies that have further heightened that concern. There was one within the past month where he started talking about the Battle of Gettysburg during the American Civil War, and those remarks were just very strange. Now, on the age question, polling does continue to show that he enjoys an advantage over Biden, that he's still seen, at least at the cognitive level, as more vigorous than Biden. But he is very sensitive to any suggestions of, losing any sort of sharpness of faculty himself. And those questions have definitely become more acute recently.
Now, this court case he's presently involved in, he has to be there. Mm-hmm. It's a criminal trial. It is about the $130,000 that his former fixer and solicitor, Michael Cohen, gave to Stormy Daniels for her to keep quiet. That happened, that operation to keep Stormy Daniels quiet happened immediately after a tape called the Access Hollywood tape, which was deeply shocking. Probably the roughest moment Niley had in the campaign. He didn't want to follow that with news that he'd paid an adult actress $130,000. So it is, that's being deemed as election interference. But you could equally make the case, couldn't you, and he is, and his lawyers, that in fact what he was trying to avoid was embarrassment, more trouble.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly the distinction in the case. The question is partly whether these payments were made to advance and protect a political campaign or to protect Donald Trump's marriage. And that is up in the air. I mean, many people, including myself, think that this case is actually, relatively speaking, the weakest yes. from the prosecution standpoint against Trump. It's worth noting, in the interest of fairness, Eamon, that there was a broadly similar case about a decade ago with a Democrat, John Edwards, who you may remember was the yes. vice presidential nominee for John Kerry. To make a long story short, it later emerged that payments had been funneled to a woman who was not John Edwards' wife, who he was having an affair with and who had he had a child with. He was charged with violations of election law in that case and was acquitted on one and the jury deadlocked on others because they essentially bought the argument that it was a payments that were made to protect personal sensitivities rather than to advance a political campaign.
Yes, and just to finish off, Niall, what's happening on the university campuses across the country now, everywhere from Columbia University in New York to Texas, it seems to be a growing movement on the universities. Is there any evidence to suggest that these students will boycott Biden and not vote for him? And by doing that, this riddle, if you don't vote for Biden, I speak for myself, I wouldn't vote for him now because I think he's been craven and is responsible for much suffering. But then I'd see the alternative, Donald Trump. It's going to put people in a curious place, is it not?
It is, absolutely, and particularly people who are sympathetic to the Palestinians. A second yes. Trump presidency would be even more pro-Israel than Biden is, but Biden's position is sufficiently pro-Israel to have alienated a large number of young voters in particular, Eamon. I mean, there was a poll out just this week talking about whether your sympathies lie primarily with Israel or the Palestinians. And we see very clearly the generational divide there. 33% of the under 30s sympathizing more with the Palestinians as against 20% with the Israelis. More Democrats by more than 2-1. Yes. sympathizing with the Palestinians over the Israelis. So it's hard to deny that that has the capacity, at least, to have a serious electoral impact on President Biden's re-election chances.
And therefore, the most consequential election we've probably seen in our lifetime depends on Israel.
It certainly, it could depend on how that conflict goes, for sure.
Okay, now we're very grateful to you as always, Niall Stanich, Associate Editor of The Hill, a very, very good Washington newspaper. We're grateful to Niall, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.